This is the remix.
How have you guys ripped off three straight wins?
Well, just we believe in each other. It's a special group in there. You know, I'm certainly lucky to be able to come over and be a part of it. And that belief is just in there. You know, we're just out there playing hockey, having fun. The mood in the room is great. Everybody's just supporting each other. And we're just having a great time right now.
You're on the elevator up to the press box with Graney and Bischoff.
Game 7, Stanley Cup Final, is tonight between the Oilers and Panthers as Edmonton looks to become the second team to ever fall behind 3-0 and come back and win a championship. Can you believe Connor McDavid didn't record a point in Game 6, by the way?
It's a bum. No Conn Smythe for him.
He's going into Game 6. He's 5 points away from tying Gretzky's record. Right. You're looking at like, well, he puts up 3-2. That's very doable for Connor McDavid.
He had four earlier in the season.
And he goes zero?
The series.
He goes zero? Now he's got to have a 5-point game to tie the record? Unbelievable, McDavid.
Well, that's not going to happen.
I mean, it could. The Golden Knights scored 9 on this team in their clinching game last year.
Not just no points. He didn't even have a shot on goal.
Get him out of here. And he's had a penalty, 2 penalty minutes. Oh, net negative.
Take away the Conn Smythe.
He's getting carried to Game 7 over here. What a bum.
If the Oilers win this year, just don't even give a Conn Smythe. He doesn't deserve it.
Give it to Stuart Skinner.
Give it to anybody.
So McDavid has 42, which is tied for 4th. All time. It's only Gretzky and Lemieux that have put up 40-plus points in a single postseason. He, again, needs 5 to tie the record. That's probably not going to happen, but it's not crazy to think he could have 2 or 3 tonight and puts himself with, you know, the second best postseason run ever by points, and that could be what we see tonight. If Connor McDavid has a good game, Edmonton comes back to win. Be looking at one of the biggest moments in NHL history. One hockey story I did want to talk to you about, Ed. Did you see what happened to the Phoenix Coyotes?
The Phoenix Coyotes?
Arizona Coyotes, they are. The team that doesn't exist but still exists. So the NHL took the Coyotes out of Arizona.
Right.
But they agreed to give the owner, Alex Marullo, an expansion team if he
get an arena built.
Yes, in the next 5 years.
Right.
Last week, there was supposed to be an auction for a plot of land. The Coyotes have said they were expecting to win that auction for the land.
Where they would put the arena.
And then they'd build an arena. The auction got canceled. ESPN's story on this said that the reason it was canceled is related to the kind of hockey arena that Marullo was allowed to build on the land. The Coyotes said this land was already zoned for an indoor hockey arena, which was a relic from a previous attempt to build a youth hockey facility in the area, but that does not cover the construction of a 17,000-seat NHL arena, and that the auction was canceled because they realized, the people that are planning to buy this do not have the proper zoning to actually build an NHL arena.
So how can Arizona/Salt Lake City not know this?
I do not know.
How can they be so stupid?
It is unbelievable that one team that's not a team anymore can be this incompetent.
Yeah.
They literally lost the team. Alex Marullo does not have a hockey team anymore because he couldn't get an arena built in the Phoenix area. And now, when they're about to buy the land
that supposedly would house the arena,
they can't get the zoning permits right to actually build this arena. And so they had to cancel the auction because they were like, well, we can't do anything with it right now.
I'm not liking this guy's chances at expansion.
How can one person, or I don't even know what this is, organization, whatever they are at the moment, how could they be so bad? Like you lost the team. The team does not exist anymore
because of your incompetence.
You don't have it because you couldn't get an arena built,
right?
And now you're given this wonderful clause of, hey, in 5 years get an arena built and
we'll give you a franchise,
you get a team back.
Yeah,
you know how hard that was for Vegas to get a team. And Alex Marullo is just given one. Just all you got to do is get an arena built. and he can't get a zoning permit for the land because it was for a youth hockey instead of for an actual NHL arena? Because they probably just looked at it and said, oh, it's already zoned
well,
for hockey.
That's, I was going to say, what happened was they looked at it and assumed because of the youth hockey facility that they had enough zoning rights to build an NHL arena.
It's unbelievable how bad they are. It's incredible how bad they are. This is a quote, by the way. Craig Morgan tweeted this out. One of the councilmen in Phoenix, Jim Waring, his council or his district is where this was going to be built. He said, quote, the Coyotes should get a zoning attorney. They don't have one.
How can they not have an attorney that tells them what they need to build an arena on that plot of land? Franchises don't have attorneys. I think Bill Foley has attorneys.
Are they in a franchise anymore? I don't know.
Well, he should have someone telling him whether or not he can buy this plot of land and zone it correctly.
You'd think so, but you'd also think they would have gotten a damn arena built in the last decade, but instead they played at a college hockey arena and then lost the team to Salt Lake.
Right.
I mean, they've still got time to do this. I assume they can get this rezoned. They can get the right permits
for this.
Yeah,
they've got 5 years.
I assume. But again, they've been screwing around without an arena forever now. But it's just incredible incompetence to be like, yeah, we're going to buy that plot of land, and I'm not going to hire or ask anybody with any expertise
about the zoning
in this topic
rights
to make sure we're good to go. Don't give him a team back. Right. At least not that guy. Phoenix can have a team back, but not him.
Get a new owner.
Why would you go back to him?
Right. Especially after all this happened.
I know they already agreed to give him one back. I don't think they can go back on that. But, like, what are we doing here? Like, why would you, like, why are there so many people that are bad at owning a sports team?
Just because they have a lot of money and they think it's cool to own sports teams and they have no idea what they're doing. There's just a bunch of billionaires out there who say, yeah, it'd be kind of cool for me to own that team. I don't know what I'm doing. but I have a lot of money, so I can buy it. And the leagues don't care as long as you have the money to buy the team.
The league should start requiring you hire an attorney to make sure the zoning permits are right.
You know how many attorneys Bill Foley must have?
He's probably got a zoning permit one.
Exactly.
Foley's got to have a ton because
he's got a
damn professional team in like four or five different countries
with all
now.
His businesses?
Yeah.
He's got to have a million attorneys.
So he owns a soccer team in England. He owns one in Spain. He just got a new one in New Zealand that actually plays in the Australian League, so that's two different countries right there. He's got one in Scotland, which
he's
is
got
technically
his
still
team.
The United Kingdom, and then he's got a hockey team here in the U.S. He's going to have 10 different lawyers in every country.
Yeah, absolutely.
This guy's incredible.
And this guy in Arizona doesn't have one.
Right. Does he even have a friend?
Not on the zoning committee.
What do you think? Okay, did Utah hire all the lawyers?
They came with the team?
I don't know. Did they? The players did.
Yeah, the players did.
Did Alex Murillo lose everybody? Was just everybody out the door? And he's like, all right, I guess I'll do it by myself. And it's not going very well there. So we'll see. One Golden Knights topic. Anthony Mantha. Apparently the Golden Knights told him he isn't coming back. RDS is a French-Canadian media outlet, so this is actually translated from French and English. But his quote to RDS was, Vegas made it clear they were not going to put me back under contract. Golden Knights traded a second and a fourth round pick for Mantha at the trade deadline. He only scored 3 goals in 18 games in the regular season and then got healthy scratched during the postseason, played in 3 of those 7 games. It's not surprising that Mantha's not coming back.
No.
He was a bust of a trade.
Right.
Are you surprised that he was told by Vegas, hey, you're not coming back, when we're still not sure if they've talked to Jonathan Marchessault?
I don't know if one equals the other. I mean, I don't know if one hand shakes the other on that one. I think they just thought that it was a horrible trade, get rid of him, and then they'll focus on whatever else they have to do. I'd love to know if they've even talked to Marchessault yet.
Right. Well, that's my thing.
I mean, have they even talked to him?
They obviously told Mantha, or he said.
Yeah, you're not coming back.
Right. And so they've at least reached out to one of their free agents and said, we're not interested. Again, the last update, and we're about a month of this is about a month old, but the last update we got is that the Golden Knights
had not
even talked to Marchessault. they're certainly okay with reaching out to their free agents and saying something to them.
Right.
But they hadn't talked to them yet. Maybe they have since then, but we don't know yet.
I cannot believe at least Brisson, the agent, has not had some conversation with these guys about what are you going to do or what are you thinking. Do you have a number in mind? This is our number. I just can't believe that hasn't happened. It's getting close. Getting really close.
I have to believe Jonathan Marshall's agent has had conversations with other teams.
Oh, he should have.
We have no evidence of that.
No, but you think he should have?
If you're a good agent, you know what the market is. Because if you are having conversations with the Golden Knights, then it's, hey, like, we're expecting our market value to be
this
$8 million a year. And it's the Golden Knights like, well, we're offering 6.5. And you're like, well, you got to bring that up some. Right. We got to get closer to 8. Whereas if you're not talking to other teams, then what the Golden Knights would be offering is all you would know. Right. Or they're not talking to the Golden Knights at all. And it's just like, well, we think we can get $8 million from a couple
different
teams.
To give you 8.
So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, so Anthony Mantha not coming back. One of the worst trade deadline acquisitions for the Golden Knights, just given that they didn't give up anything crazy. A second and a fourth's not awful. It's a decent amount for a team that doesn't have a lot of picks now. But to give up a second and a fourth and you ultimately are healthy scratching the guy in the postseason, it's very similar to the Tomas Tatar trade back in year one. That they gave up a first, second, and a third for Tatar, and then Gerard Gallant didn't want to play that guy in the postseason. So those are two of the worst trade deadline acquisitions for the Golden Knights, where they traded for a winger and it just didn't fit, didn't work out very well.
We're really close to understanding what they're going to do, and it's going to be fascinating with these free agents.
Yeah, free agents starts in July.
Yeah, exactly.
So
fascinating what they're going to do with all these guys.
Yeah, because they don't have a lot of cap space. Right. So it'll be fun because basically any signing that they make is like, oh, well, now they're losing. Now this guy's obviously got to be gone or something like that. Like anything they do kind of eliminates something else from happening or requires a completely different move. Like if they sign Marshall to like an $8 million deal, somebody's got to go.
Right.
Like they're going to have another move to make that work. So we'll see. There'll be an interesting team, and they honestly could kind of do nothing. Like they could make like a minor signing and that be it.
Right.
And just say, we're going to call up guys like Brisson and Dorofeev and we're going to rely on them. We made one signing here and our defensemen are good to go. They could do absolutely nothing and have their roster kind of set with expecting some younger guys to come up and help. So we'll see. All right, here's the word for anybody that missed it earlier. It's the summer of fun. We're giving away a vacation every week for 8 weeks. This is week 2, and this trip is 6 days and 5 nights to Nashville. It's going to include a trip to the Jack Daniel's Distillery, and you're going to get $750 in spending cash. To get entered to win, you got to text us the code word. Today's code word is PARTY, P-A-R-T-Y, PARTY. Text that to 702-364-1100. You do that, you're entered to win. That's all you got to do. There'll be a new code word tomorrow. You can get entered to win again tomorrow. 702-364-1100. That's the phone number. PARTY is the code word. Text PARTY to 702-364-1100, and you will be entered to win a trip to Nashville.
It's Bischoff's Briefs. Brought to you by Paul Padilla. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery. Bischoff's Briefs.
Mr. Madison will go first. Mr. Gordon, choose the topic.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Reflections of society and literature.
Bischoff's Briefs.
At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought.
Bischoff's Briefs.
And it's the summer of soccer. You ready for some more soccer updates?
We haven't had enough this morning.
We haven't.
So let's have some more.
What else do you want to talk
every
about?
Day,
hockey? Come
every
on.
Day.
You're
let's
leaving
go.
In 3 days. Do you know how much hockey or soccer I got to get in the next
let's
couple
go.
Of days?
Let's go.
All right. Mexico beat Jamaica. They won 1-0, scored a 69th minute goal to win that game. Bums. But Mexico's captain, Edson Alvarez, left the game with an injury, non-contact injury, went down holding his hamstring. I have not seen an update on
those
his
are
status
never good.
Just yet. Mexico and Jamaica played in Houston. They played at the Houston Texans Stadium. They laid grass down on top of the turf.
The turf.
So A lot of NFL stadiums have turf, not grass. We've talked about there's a lot of back and forth about players, and they're like, we want to play on grass. It's safer. The injuries go up on turf, and the NFL pushes back against that because it's more expensive. Hercules Gomez tweeted this out, because when these big soccer tournaments are hosted here, they require grass. But Hercules Gomez tweeted, Mexican national team injuries on grass laid over turf fields. Chapo Montes before the 2014 World Cup, Nestor Araujo before the 2018 World Cup, and now Edson Alvarez in Copa America. All in Texas, all on newly laid grass on turf fields. In all caps, stop with laying grass over turf fields. Do you believe that's a fair criticism of the injuries or reason for the injuries, that it is grass laid on top of turf and not just a natural,
I mean,
normal
it could be
grass
just natural
playing
fluke?
Surface? Could be. Yes.
Can this be a fluke?
I don't know if anybody has actually studied grass on top of turf.
Right.
We get every year comparisons between grass field
and
injuries
turf.
And turf injuries right. in the NFL. But I don't know that anybody said, all right, what happens when you lay the grass on top of the turf? Because we don't do that often. You just play on the turf or you play right. on the grass most of the time. But that is a potential injury. They did yesterday. The U.S. played in Arlington at the Cowboys Stadium. Same thing. Grass laid over turf.
Right.
Nobody left that game with an injury. So we survived, I guess.
Yeah.
But potential problem. World Cup is coming here in 2026. They're going to be playing on grass. I don't know if the plan is to completely redo it and put grass down for the World Cup or if it's just grass over
turf.
Yeah, I do know some of the stadiums, I can't remember which one, I think Dallas is one of them, have to like do some internal modifications to make sure the field's wide enough, because a lot of our football stadiums, like the one we built here, we built it not wide enough to host a World Cup
soccer game
tournament. The Copa America puts up with it, but the World Cup is requiring it to be more wide. Wider would be the word. So they've got to go in and say, hey, we got to push these seats out or something like that. So that'll be fun. But yeah, so some turf and grass debates in soccer that we always get in football. Now, in the Euros, Ed. First off, from the weekend, Hungary beat Scotland 1-0 with a goal in the 100th minute of the game. They had 10 minutes of stoppage time because one of Hungary's players got stretchered off because he had a fractured face.
It's
multiple fractures in his face. Yeah, he went down. It was pretty ugly. It was bad to where the Hungary bench and players on the field were yelling at the medical staff with the stretcher to get out there faster.
As soon as possible.
Because like the trainers went out to treat him on the field, and then they were like, oh, we're going to need the stretcher. And the guys were just sort of jogging, and they were getting yelled at by the Hungary bench to run faster to get the stretcher out there. He got stretchered off. It was a long delay. I was going to say he's fine, but he's got broken bones in his face. So he's not fine, but he's going to be fine. But that led to 10 minutes of stoppage time in which Hungary scored in the 100th minute, which eliminated Scotland. They're knocked out. And it gave Hungary a chance to qualify because 4 third-place teams will qualify for the next round in the Euros. They have an opportunity of doing that. They do have a goal difference of -3, which could hurt them because if you end up tied with other third-place teams, it goes to goal difference, and -3 is pretty bad. So Hungary, though, kept themselves alive with that 100th-minute goal. Also, Kylian Mbappe did not play.
Thought he was going to play
for France
with the mask on.
He was on the bench, but he never subbed in. France drew the Netherlands as a scoreless draw. Nobody scored. Kind of boring. Both of those teams have 4 points entering their final group games. Both of them just need a tie to guarantee they advance, and they both should do that. They'll be favored to do so. Today, Ed, Italy plays Croatia.
My team plays. Croatia plays today.
So Croatia, top 10 team in the world coming in, has 1 point through 2 games. They have to win. Have to win. If they win, I believe they advance if they win. They have to win. If they lose or draw, they're done. They're out of the tournament as a top 10 team in the world after the group stages. So they have to win, and they're playing Italy. They're not playing some bum team. They're playing Italy.
More importantly, when he was in Croatia, the son took the Game of Thrones tour.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How long was it? Is that a whole day thing?
I don't know if it was a whole day because he went cliff diving the same day.
Okay, so probably not a whole day.
Probably not the whole day. But in fine form, Tristan said, I didn't pay for it. I just joined it.
What, he just walked up?
He just kind of like, they're all walking, you know, stopping, looking at all the sites of Game of Thrones. Hey, this is where this was, and this is where this was. If you remember, I think he just walked in the back.
Look at him go.
Sure.
How big was this group?
I have no idea.
Got to be like 20 plus.
Yeah.
Or just a horrific tour guide.
Right, or a guy who didn't notice the kid in the back.
Because, like, I've been on tours in other cities. If it's, like, 10 people or less, they know who everybody is after, like, two stops. But if there's, like, 25, yeah, maybe.
You got a shot.
Sneak in there, like, I don't remember that guy.
Yeah, you got a shot.
Oh, well, I'm not going to kick him out. But good for him.
Yeah, Croatia.
Yeah, you didn't have to pay for that either.
Not on the tour. I think he paid for everything else, but not on the tour.
Is he back yet, or is he still
he's back.
Okay, he's not in France anymore?
No, he's back. Came back from France, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Good for him.
Excited. He's back.
Good for him. And Croatia's going to get knocked out. If Croatia wins today, it's his fault.
It's a big difference.
Ruin the whole country. Also, Spain plays Albania. Spain has already advanced with two wins. Albania, by the way, if they beat Spain, they advance. They go to the round of 16 in the Euros. Albania came in. They're like ranked 66 in the world. And all three teams in their group are in the top 10. Italy, Spain, and Croatia are all top 10 teams. If Albania beats Spain, who again has already advanced, Spain has already won the group.
So Spain might just sit
Spain
back.
Spain has
and say,
nothing to
we're
play
okay,
for.
We're okay. We're already through.
Yeah. They have legitimately nothing changes for Spain, win, lose, or draw. They're still much better than Albania.
Well, they might say, hey,
but
let's play all the bumps.
If Albania wins, we're talking about a team outside the top 60 advancing out of this group. We're in the top 10 into this round of 16. They have one extra round because there's more European teams than South American teams. And all. South America's ridiculous. There's 10 countries.
Yeah.
They play a turn. They play tournaments
right
all the time. Yeah. They have to come to us to get a real tournament. They have to add
and what
six
does that
teams
say?
From North America. Because they normally, I don't know if normally, but they will often like have a team or two or four or five or six join Copa America. I think Qatar did before the last World Cup. Just because, hey, we have 10 teams. How do we do a tournament here? Well, it'd be nice if we had 16 instead of 10. So they should just add us all the time.
Give us a chance.
We should just do a giant North and South America tournament every 4 years instead of doing two different ones where it's South America and Copa America, and then we play in like the Gold Cup, and it's like us, Mexico, Canada, and then every tiny island in the Gulf of Mexico or the Caribbean. It's like, what are we doing? So just combine all of it. Yeah. That'll be way more fun. And then we can get to play Argentina and Brazil and Colombia every 4 years. And beat them, obviously.
Well, obviously. Yeah, obviously, yeah. There's no chance they would lose those games.
Yeah, I mean, over the next 10 years, we're going to just dominate everybody. Yeah. We're going to be the best soccer-playing team in the world. Don't smirk at me like that's not true. We're going to beat Uruguay in a few... Well, we're going to beat Panama first, and then Uruguay, and then we'll get either Brazil or Colombia in the quarters. Easy win. And then we'll play the other one, most likely. Argentina's not till the final. We'll knock Messi out and make him cry in the final. But yeah, we'll be the first team to beat Argentina in a final in like 6 years or whatever it's been. It's going to be great.
I was right before the U.S. started after Mexico won. What was that, Saturday? Yeah. I was looking at some odds, and Mexico actually had higher odds to make the semifinals than the U.S. did.
Yeah, because their path is unbelievably easy. We've talked about this. They don't have to beat a good team to get to the semis.
Yeah, in the semis, they would play a good team.
They would play Argentina in the semis, where they would get slaughtered. But the best team they have to beat is like Ecuador to get to the semis. It's a joke.
Do we still think Cassie's, what was it, her cousin, his prediction?
I don't know. That guy's an idiot.
That guy was talking
that Mexico would only win one game.
They've already won
They've already won one.
Oh, well, maybe this is the highest point they'll reach.
They should win four and then lose in the semis to Argentina.
So you think they sweep in group stage?
They should. They probably won't. It's soccer, but they should. They should probably go like 3-0
and win in the quarters.
Yeah, they don't play anybody. Argentina's group is a joke too. They're going to play Peru in the quarters. We're going to play Brazil.
Well, it's an easy win.
We might win our group and play Brazil in the quarters because Colombia might win that group. Colombia hasn't lost a game in like 4 years. Meanwhile, they're going to get Peru in the quarterfinals. So, yes, they should make the semi. They're more likely to make the semis than us. But they're bums. They're going to lose to Argentina by 16 goals. and one of their best players. Just
I would take
blows
the under on that.
Under 16?
Yes.
Going out on a limb there.
I would take the under. Hey, Canada came through for me.
I'm going to make it 1,669 goals is how many Argentina
right.
will
there
score.
You go.
Coming up next, we'll get back into the Stanley Cup Final.
This has been Bischoff's Briefs, brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery. Live from the Findlay Toyota ESPN Las Vegas studios, this is The Press Box with Granny and Bischoff on ESPN Las Vegas.
Joining us now from NHL.com is Derek Van Diest. Good morning, Derek. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Derek.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Are doing great. I got to ask you a question based on your Twitter bio. When Chile and Canada play here in Copa America, who are you cheering for?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I'm going to have to try and get one of those jerseys where half and half jerseys. I don't know. I guess they've never met before in a tournament like this. So, yeah, I'm going to have to, you know, born in Chile, raised in Canada. That's a tough one. That's like asking who your kids you like better. So it's I'm going to have to make that decision, I think.
I believe they're the last game in that group. So there's a chance one of them's already eliminated and it'll be an easy choice for you.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, maybe that happens. You know what? I was hoping to get down to Orlando, but I maybe at the draft, or even better, might be covering a Stanley Cup parade. So I don't know which I prefer, but yeah, there was three options there on the 29th.
All right, it's been since the 40s since a team won a Stanley Cup final after falling behind 3-0. Is it hyperbole to say this is the biggest game in NHL history, or do you think that is an accurate statement going into Game 7 tonight?
No, I think it is in modern day history. I think this is one of those games that it just doesn't happen. Like you're looking at how long ago it happened, 1942. No one was obviously around to see that. No one's around that was there at that game. Just the way this series has gone, I don't think it was a 3-0 series when we were at 3-0, and I don't think the Oilers have been that dominant to getting back to 3-3. But yeah, this is the way the series has developed, and no team's ever done it. It's just so hard to do. It's hard to play from the edge of a cliff for four games, and it's a tough thing to do. But I think to get to this point, yeah, this might be one of the biggest and at least most entertaining or most interesting Stanley Cup Final Game 7s, just because of the way the Oilers managed to get back into the series, the way the stars have aligned to perhaps Connor McDavid can kind of cement his legacy as one of the best players of all time in the NHL. There's just a lot of things going on with this game. You're looking at the Florida Panthers side. You know, they don't want to be the first team to blow a 3-0 lead. If they do that, they would be considered, you know, one of the biggest chokers in Stanley Cup Finals history. So there's a lot on the line in that sense. But, yeah, I think in modern-day history, you're looking at this game, and it's interesting because of how we got here.
Derek, I know it was just one game, but did 8-1 change this series that much?
I think it did. I think it left the mark. I think it was a situation where I thought Florida was outplayed in the first two of the first three games of the series. I thought the Oilers came in here in game one. They played a really solid game. They were really good, and they just came out, and they lost that game, but they really felt really good about how they played. Florida had a pushback in game two. The Oilers were expecting it. But in game three, I think the Oilers felt that, again, they played well enough to win that game and probably should have won that game. A mistake cost them when it was 1-1, and they ended up losing that game. But they were down 3-0, but they felt that series should not have been 3-0. And I think that was the situation. And then you get to game four. Florida brings in 150 family members into Edmonton. They're ready for a big party. They're ready for a big celebration. And Edmonton wipes the floor with them. And I think that does leave a mark heading home. Suddenly you're like, oh, my goodness, this might be a little tougher than we thought. We have to win game five. We've set up for game five, and they lose game five. And now they're really kind of reeling. So I do think getting beat 8-1, I think it did affect them psychologically in a little bit.
What do you think happened these last two games, or three games, to Sergei Bobrovsky? Are we just looking at small sample size hockey where things can go poorly even if the play isn't poorly? Do you think he's played poorly? I know Matthew Tkachuk gave a quote about it not being Bobrovsky's fault. Like, what do you think's been the problem for Bobrovsky?
Well, I think more so when you have elite goal scorers like the Edmonton Oilers do. They have elite goal scorers in Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid, Zach Hyman, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. These are all guys that have scored 50 goals in the league. So I think when you're facing the same shooters, every game, game in and game out, they'll eventually figure you out. They'll eventually look at, they'll pawn over film, they'll look at tape, they'll look at your past games, and they'll figure out your weaknesses. Every goaltender has a weakness, and I think early on, they probably weren't as familiar with Bobrovsky because they hadn't faced him. They only faced him two times all year. But the more you see him, the more I think you're able to get to him. And I think in the later stages of this series, I don't think it was so much Bobrovsky. I think it was so much the owners figured him out. And I think it's kind of like a quarterback sees the same defense. Eventually, he's going to be able to figure out the defense if he sees him enough. I think it was the same situation. When you have elite goal scorers, they're elite for a reason, and it's tough to keep them off the board. And I think that was one of the situations there that they figured out where his weaknesses are. And if you look at the first three games as they're trying to beat him low, and then the last three games where a lot of the goals are high glove side or high blocker side, I think they have figured out something there.
We've talked about this before the last week or so. If Florida wins tonight, is it a foregone conclusion that McDavid's the Conn Smythe winner?
I think so. I think regardless of what happens tonight, I think the thing is Florida doesn't have one standout guy. It's been a really team effort to get here. You know, one game, Sergei Bobrovsky's been great. Another game, Sam Reinhart's been great. The third game, Tkachuk has played well. Alexander Barkov has played well. It's kind of been a group effort. It's been a group effort in Edmonton as well, but it just the way McDavid has taken over and the way the numbers he's put up in this postseason, and you look at, you're comparing him to Gretzky and Lemieux, and he's had as good a playoffs as those guys. And when your name is in the same sentence as Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux, the elite of the elite of the NHL, I think it's tough to look at this playoff run and what he's done in the playoff run and say, you know what, you weren't the best player in the playoffs. And I think, to me, it was important to get to Game 7. I think if you get to Game 7, then that the Conn Smythe can go either way. But you're looking at the best player in the playoffs. Even if they don't win, I think Connor McDavid, head and shoulders, has been the best player in the playoffs.
If Edmonton does pull this off, some of the comparisons cross-sport that we've talked about have been the Cavaliers and LeBron James coming from 3-1 down to beat the Warriors, the Patriots coming back from 28-3, and both of those instances, it was the best player of a generation in LeBron James, the best player of a generation in Tom Brady. This is the best player of a generation. Is it fair to put this accomplishment? Would you even put it above those two in North American sports?
Well, I think I would put it up there with that. And I think, you look at the Boston Red Sox, they came back from 3-0 on the Yankees in the playoffs that one year and went on to win the series. And I think that's up there as well, too. And you're right. These generational players, these standout players, this brings the best out in him. And so when the Oilers were down 3-0, I think it will put it in perspective as one of the greatest comebacks in North American sports. But when they were down 3-0, it almost looked like, oh, that's a window of opportunity for Connor McDavid. It's a window of opportunity for him to do something that no one's ever done in NHL in modern day history. And I think he took it upon that challenge. And I think that was one of the things that he looked at it as, okay, here's a challenge for me. And those great players, like we've all seen Michael Jordan talk about challenges when they get challenged, they rise to the occasion. And I think that's the situation here. Yeah, this would be one of the greatest comebacks, in my opinion, in North American sports history, just because of the way it's so hard to do in hockey.
Well, he is Derek Van Deest from NHL.com. Game 7 tonight between the Oilers and Panthers. Derek, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Derek.
No, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
So there's Derek Van Deest on the NHL, but also a little bit of Copa America. He's going to have to cheer for country he's born in and country lives in. Now, Canada will be eliminated by then. So
he just goes with the Chile shirt.
Yeah, Chile might be too. Because they drew.
And what does he do? Get a USA jersey?
They drew. There's a real chance that.
It's Danny's hat.
Four teams in a group. He cheers for two of them. Real chance that both of them are eliminated from that group and that it's Peru and Argentina that advance instead. Because Chile drew Peru. Like, they should have beaten Peru. It's not like a crazy upset, but like, they were favored to win. They should have won that game. And now they're gonna have to beat Canada almost certainly to get out because their other game is Argentina.
Right.
So they might need to get a draw. Probably not. They should probably be fine if they just beat Canada. Because Peru, well, we'll see. Peru, honestly, that group might come down to who beats Canada by more, Chile or Peru.
Derek can't like that.
That might be what that comes down to. Unless Canada pulls off a win or two here, then that could be helpful. But yeah, it might come down to, because that's what here's the thing about the U.S. If they win the group, they play here in Vegas in the quarterfinal.
Right.
If they finish second in the group, they go to Arizona. And so both U.S. and Uruguay won their first game yesterday, and both won by 2 goals. We play Panama next, who is better than Bolivia, and Uruguay plays Bolivia. It could come down, and then we'd play Uruguay on the final day. It'll come down to goal difference if we both win and then tie each other in the final group, which means we need to beat Panama by as many goals as possible. And it kind of sucks that we only beat Bolivia by 2. We had a really good chance, and Ricardo Pepi should have scored. He had 2 really good chances back to back. He's got to put 1 in the net.
Could have been 4. 3? At least?
Okay, here's the thing. It should not have been 2 in the first half. We did not create a lot of great chances in the first half. I think we had like 0.5 expected goals in the first half and scored 2. In the second half, we were much better but didn't score a goal. So, yes, in the second half, we probably should have scored 2. In the first half, though, we should have had 0 or 1. So it balanced out.
It evens out.
But it would have been nice to at least get a 3rd, and a 4th would have been spectacular for goal difference, because then we could go in that Uruguay game probably only needing a draw. Now we might have to beat Uruguay to win the group and play here, which is really just selfish for me. It doesn't really matter if we win the group, because we're going to play Brazil or Colombia in the second round, or in the quarterfinal, no matter what. And they're both awesome. And we're probably going to have to beat the other one in the semifinal if we win our quarterfinal. So it's not like there's an easy team if we win the group. It's going to suck either way.
Where's the final? Dallas?
I don't know. It's a good question. It's not here.
No. We only get 1 game here with the U.S., right?
Yes. Yeah. We get...
if they win the group.
Yeah. We have to win the group. Yeah. We get Brazil-Paraguay on Friday. We get Ecuador-Jamaica on Wednesday. And then we get a quarterfinal. That'll either be us or Uruguay against either Colombia or Brazil. That's the matchup. So it'll be a good quarterfinal matchup either way, but I obviously want it to be the U.S. because I don't care about Uruguay. What the hell?
Wait, aren't you going to be gone for your wedding?
Not for the quarterfinal. I am not gone until the final. Okay. The quarterfinal's in like a week.
Okay.
Or whatever it is, 9 days from now. So that'll be fine. It's July 5th, I think.
Okay.
So we'll get there. That's like 2 weeks. I can't do time. Danny's looking this up. I've been trying to stall for an answer from Danny. He hasn't gotten there. So find out next. But first, we got tickets to give away to go see Blink 182. Miami. Good job, Danny. 2 tickets to go see Blink 182 on July 3rd at T-Mobile Arena. You can buy tickets to see them on AXS.com or just win a pair right now. 702-364-1100. That is the phone number if you want to go see Blink 182 at T-Mobile Arena on July 3rd, be caller number 7 at 702-364-1100. That is 702-364-1100.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, I got one of the funnier stories of the weekend in sports. So the Olympics, when they come to the U.S. in 2028, will be hosted by L.A., except softball is going to be played in Oklahoma City.
As it should be.
No.
As it should be.
What do you mean?
That is so terrible.
It's the LA Olympics.
Well, it's the best facility we have in the country for softball.
Shipped to Oklahoma City.
Where do you want to put it? LA, UCLA?
They don't have ballparks.
Not like that one, baby.
Not
like that one. It's the best facility we have in the country.
There's nothing special about it.
Oh, it's great.
Oklahoma City. Are you kidding me?
It's the history.
You got to go.
I'm trying to think in LA. I'm trying to think in LA. Unless you build one. Play at UCLA. You play at UCLA.
Yes.
I'm trying to think other really nice parks, although UCLA is kind of dated, but you could play it there. You could play at UCLA. I'm trying to think what else. That's probably the best one.
It's softball.
Yeah. It's
We're not talking about building a 70,000 seat arena for this thing.
You wouldn't have to build one in LA. You could play at one of the colleges.
Again, they're putting it in LA. We're not
2028.
We're not putting it in Boise, Idaho. There's tons of venues around there. Unbelievable. You got to go to Oklahoma City. Danny, normally I yell at Danny for his tweets, but Danny had one of the best tweets saying, "What a bummer for Olympic softball players. Everything's in LA. These bums got to go to Oklahoma City."
What a facility, Danny.
What a facility.
Where the Oklahoma Sooners won 4 straight.
That is perfectly fine to have a fantastic facility there. However, they can't participate in any of the Olympic events.
Oh, they could do
they're going to go to LA for the opening ceremony
depending
and then
when,
fly
depending
directly.
When the competition starts,
It's so terrible.
They could do opening ceremonies, couldn't they? Depending on when the competition starts.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
We got planes. It's not completely unusual to put an event outside of the host city, like the Olympics that are coming up this year. There will be things
outside of Paris.
Right. Now, most of those events are sailing, surfing, rowing, canoeing. So it's like
there's something
we need a body of water.
Those. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say there's something similar with those.
And then there's a lot of soccer that's played. They're playing it in different stadiums, right. But that's because you need but you need a 50,000 seat arena, right. And games are playing multiple games in the same day and games at the same time.
Right.
So I don't know what all of Paris's soccer stadiums are, but in theory, you need to have.
So they're going outside
places.
Paris.
Yeah. So there's Marseille, Bordeaux. Nice, Nantes are all hosting soccer.
Soccer games?
Yeah, so that happens. For some reason, basketball, some of the group stages played in Lille, which is actually not far from Paris, but I don't know why. And for some reason, the handball final is in Lille.
Can't have a handball
court. And it only says final, so that means the rest of handball is in Paris.
It's in Paris.
And then they move the final out of Paris? I don't know.
Maybe they need that facility for something else.
Maybe. I don't know what's happening there. But
no, you're right. I mean, look, softball could go to UCLA.
Right.
There are softball stadiums. How many people will be at this final? I don't know.
Probably a team. It's the Olympics. Yeah, it's probably. The Olympics. I'm guessing a lot of people will go to Oklahoma City, though. Like softball fans are going to be like, oh.
They're huge in terms of the fans there. Yeah. It'll be a lot of fans.
And if you're putting every Olympic softball game is in Oklahoma City,
right?
And you like softball?
You'd go there in a second.
Yeah, I'm going to Oklahoma City.
Right.
Also, canoe slaloming will be in Oklahoma City as well.
That sounds fake. Is it going to be in Oklahoma City?
In Oklahoma City?
Yeah, along with softball.
Now, I could see softball, but canoe slaloming?
Best facilities in the country for canoe slalom. What the hell is that?
Basically, you race down the river or whatever they use in a canoe.
But wouldn't that just be regular canoeing?
Yeah, but this is racing. I don't know. I've never watched canoe slalom.
Neither have I.
But it will be held in Oklahoma City.
Well, Oklahoma City's getting a few events.
They got like a fast river.
I mean, you could see softball because of the facility. But yeah, I was going to say, where's the river, huh?
They might have just as much water drought as we do. It's hot there, isn't it?
Hot and humid.
I couldn't tell you. Why don't we put on the Mississippi River? You got to go from Minnesota, make it to the Gulf. Who gets there first?
Oh, boy.
It'll be the
three-day race.
It's the first. Yeah, exactly. It starts very first event. It's also the very last event to end.
Exactly.
It'll be great. It's the U.S. Why don't we do that? That'd be fun.